When a friend and I went to South Africa a couple of years ago, we made sure to go to the Apartheid Museum when we were in Johannesburg. This amazing museum tells the story of how South Africa went from British colonial rule to white separatist rule to the democracy that we know today. It tells an unflinching account of the cruelty black South Africans suffered under white rule. It is painfully honest about the ways non-black South African people of color were caught in the middle, at times helping the whites and also suffering under white rule themselves. In 2010, the Apartheid Museum's director, Christopher Till, wrote, "Those of us who lived through the bleak and brutal years of apartheid will always carry its shadow in our lives. We will also remember the surging energy of the struggle against apartheid and the profound sense of community and solidarity that it produced. But memory is partial," he says, "and fleeting, even when it is personal. And those who did not live through the period need ways to understand the reality of racial domination and its consequences." As a person walks from display to display in the stark official feeling museum, one does not feel free there. The museum's layout itself evokes the bureaucratic straitjacket, restricting all who lived under apartheid. The system of segregation and discrimination on the grounds of race that was in force in South Africa from 1948 to 1990. Each museum visitor is assigned a racial category as they enter. As they journey through the dark days of oppression toward hard-won liberation, they are invited to imagine life through the eyes of their ethnic group, the one that they have been assigned. If you are assigned to be a person of color, the first part of the museum is absolutely bleak. If you are white, it is confusingly comfortable, and apartheid seems like a logical labor system required to keep order by those who actually owned the land and the mines and the businesses. Photographs of strong, well-armed white policemen are everywhere, and every restroom, bench, and water fountain in the museum is labeled white or non-white, and you may use them or not use them, depending on your category. Regardless of your assigned racial category, the museum feels like a prison. You cannot escape apartheid. Then, little by little, a small ray of hope begins to appear. Just when you think that you cannot take one more photograph of South African blacks being mistreated, one black man in particular begins to appear. You begin to spot the name and the face of Nelson Mandela. And you sense that a small light has been lit in the darkness. It is faint and fragile. It could be put out at any moment. But there it is, shining as if the darkness wouldn't dare overtake it. Nelson Mandela, who was released on February 11th, 1990, having spent 27 years behind bars, is the first candle of a bright movement that would release his people and inspire the world. But even Mandela himself could not have foreseen his own transformation from an unruly agitator to the light of freedom his people needed. Of Mandela, Archbishop Desmond Tutu says, "When Mandela went to prison, he was an angry young man, appalled at the miscarriage of justice. Those years in prison were quite crucial. Suffering deepened his spiritual resource, and he grew in that time in generosity of spirit. Darkness was what made the light possible. Hanukkah commemorates the rededication of the Jewish temple in Jerusalem in the year 165 BCE. After a three-year war, the Maccabees waged on the Greek ruler Antiochus IV. After engaging in guerrilla warfare from their caves in the hills, the Maccabees finally demoralized Antiochus's troops to the point that they gave up the battle and relinquished Jerusalem. When they re-entered the city, the Jews found that the temple had been defiled. The structure stood, but all its furnishings and decorations were gone. The walls and roof sustained fire damage, and pigs had been raised in it as a sign of defiance. Everything of value was stolen or smashed. The story tells us that a great cleanup effort ensued. People swept and washed. Some built new temple furniture, others painted or made new copies of the Torah. It is said that one woman found a jar of oil that had not been smashed. It still held the priest's seal from before the war and was declared sanctified. There was enough oil in the jar to last only one night, and you know how this story goes. The story tells us it miraculously burned for 8 nights, long enough to find additional oil and to have it blessed. Acknowledging this miracle, the chief priest declared that these events be celebrated with mirth and gladness for all time to come. I'm sure that each of you has had the experience of being in complete physical darkness and then lighting a single candle. It's amazing how much light that produces, isn't it? By the light of a single candle, a person can see everyone and everything else in the room. The waves of light that pour from a single candle, along with our eyesight adjusting to its effect, can change pitch darkness from disorientation into clarity. And if that single candle is taken slowly from place to place in the darkened room, all can be revealed. The room changes with the light. Likewise, when a candle of hope is lit in the darkness of human despair, it has a tremendous effect. At the Apartheid Museum, anyone who wants to is invited to enter a replica of one of the cells where white South African officials detained black dissidents. The cells are small, concrete, and without furnishings. But the worst part of being in one is the complete isolation one experiences when the middle door clangs shut. The mind finds it very difficult to adjust to such solitude. It is utter torture, wrote Winnie Mandela, wife of Nelson Mandela and fellow freedom fighter. It becomes so difficult to keep sane with absolutely nothing to do that I would actually hunt for ants. If I had an ant or a fly in the cell, I would regard myself as having company for the day. Imagine the presence of an insect being the thing that keeps you from despair, something as small and insignificant as an ant or a fly, but as powerful as that candle in the darkness, a sign that you are not alone, a sign that you are alive. Like the Jews returning to Jerusalem to find their temple defiled, Nelson and Winnie Mandela emerged from their cells to find South Africa on the brink of civil war. The miracle of the oil is mirrored in the miracle of the peaceful power of this man and this woman to keep the violence from spilling over too badly. But just as the Maccabees lost people in the struggle to retake Jerusalem, more people died of political violence between Mandela's 1990 release and his 1994 election than in the entire apartheid period from 1948 to 1990. Freedom was costly. Costly for the Maccabees and costly for South Africa. As people as violently oppressed as long as black South Africa could not easily find unity once the white oppression was gone. Yet the candle of freedom did not go out. The very shape of the apartheid museum changes to reflect this period. From somber halls and black and white photos, the visitor moves on to a jumble of color and noise. Bright color photographs, yellow armored cars, and songs of freedom accompanying television footage invigorate the visitor, but also quicken the pulse with the fear of violence. I was reminded once again that power does not give up its hold without a struggle. Power concedes nothing without a demand. It never did and it never will, claimed 19th century American freedom fighter Frederick Douglass. Find out what people will submit to, and you have found out the exact amount of injustice which will be imposed upon them. The limits of tyrants are prescribed by the endurance of those whom they oppress, he wrote. The other aspect of bondage and freedom is the realization that rarely are those who reach freedom either the ones who were originally the enslavers or the enslaved. Generations have come and gone under the oppression. As they stood in line to vote for the first time in their lives in 1994, very few black South Africans had been alive to remember apartheid's implementation in 1948. None of them had ever known life without white masters. And the white people who stood in line to cast their votes too that autumn day of April 27th, 1994, had not been alive to remember how it had all started either. They just knew that they had been in power because of the color of their skin. And now things would be different. They would need to adjust to the new reality of living in a black democracy or leave their country. I'm sure the Jews who re-entered Jerusalem after a hard-won victory in 185 BCE would have liked to have had things go back just to the way that they had been, but they knew they wouldn't. The temple could be cleaned, repaired, and rededicated, but it would not necessarily be the same. Being Jewish had changed, and it would change again many times in the centuries to come. The members of the African National Congress who would win the 1994 election in South Africa might have liked to have had complete control over the country of South Africa, just as the whites had had for so long, but they knew that they wouldn't. The country's civil strife could be over, but life would not be the same. Being South African had changed. And it would change again and again in the coming years. That election day, no one could have predicted the power of the ANC would last for decades, only to crumble in 2017 under its own corruption. The oil in the lamp would last 8 days, but that was not the end of the story. The people had to go on with life quite changed from how it had been. We too find ourselves amid a great political upheaval. I pray ours will stay mostly nonviolent, but I cannot be sure. There are many in our society who live with a great deal of violence in their day-to-day lives already. And there are many who have been mistreated for so long that they really have nothing left to lose. This great upheaval will take its course. It will not be rushed. Neither side will completely win or completely lose, but much is at stake. What candles might we light in the darkness? How might we resist the powers of oppression and control? How will we show up for what is good and what is right? I always knew that deep down in every human heart, there is mercy and generosity, said President Nelson Mandela during his inaugural speech. If a person who has seen as much hatred and violence as Mandela can say something like this, then we must believe that it is true as well. I always knew that deep down in every human heart, there is mercy and generosity. A candle of mercy can push back the darkness of suffering. A candle of generosity can let us see one another face to face. In seeing face to face, we will know that hope survives. Lighting Hanukkah candles is a daring, daring act. It is an act of solidarity and resistance. Don't let the light go out. It's lasted for so many years. Don't let the light go out. Let it shine through our love and our tears. So be it. Amen.